Good morning, counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court, I am Robin Packle. I represent defendant appellant Lamar Johnson, and I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. The government is asking the court in this case to create a new exception to the Fourth Amendment's warrant requirement. That exception is for a search incident to a possible arrest. Neither the Supreme Court nor this court has ever in any case cited by the government, at least, upheld a search, warrantless search based on this type of exception. What happened here differs from the traditional search incident to arrest exception for two reasons. First of all, the search preceded the arrest, and second of all, the arrest that followed the search was based on the fruits of the search. The government attempts to get around this by citing to two separate lines of cases, one Rawlings from the Supreme Court and Smith from this court, that say that the arrest doesn't necessarily need to precede the search to fall within the search incident exception. And the second case is Devon Peck from the Supreme Court that holds that probable cause to arrest may be based on something different than what the officer stated in making the arrest. Applying these two exceptions or these two variances to the search incident to arrest exception in this case would go against the rationales behind the search incident to arrest exception that the Supreme Court has recognized in numerous cases, including Robinson, Knowles, Gant, Thornton, and Riley, which are to preserve evidence for use at trial, and also and primarily to protect the officer during the process of taking the person into custody. In short, search incident to arrest requires a lawful custodial arrest. And the government has presented no evidence in this case and has pointed to none that there would have been an arrest in this case had the officer not first searched Mr. Johnson.
Can I ask you,
how would you specifically suggest that we distinguish Devon Peck?
Devon Peck, Your Honor, addressed only the fact of the arrest. It was only about an arrest, even though it followed Knowles. It said nothing about Knowles. It said nothing about search incident to arrest. A long line.
It said our cases make clear that an arresting officer's state of mind, except for the facts that he knows, is irrelevant to the existence of probable cause.
That's correct, Your Honor, but I think when you're talking about a search incident to arrest exception to the warrant requirement, the government bears the burden of showing an actual arrest. And what the government,
at some point. But it's pretty hard to get around Justice Scalia's statement, isn't it? Isn't that difficult for your case?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because the arrest, it's the combination of the search preceding the arrest and the arrest being based on a different justification what the officer justified. The government nor the district court disputes that there needs to be an actual custodial arrest to justify the search incident to arrest exception. And here, the officer made the arrest, and the district court found that to be true, based on the fruits of the search. And the government, to justify the search incident to arrest, not the arrest itself, but the search incident to arrest, needs to show that an arrest would have occurred absent the search. And the government, which bore the burden in this case, has made no effort to do that, to carry that burden.
Okay, so I guess I think the same concern that Judge Wallace expressed, which is I don't see how we could rule in your client's favor without hinging the entire decision on the subjective thought processes of the officer. Because here I think you pitched the record as suggesting that the officer affirmatively declared that, oh, no, I was not going to arrest him based just on the marijuana or was it driving without a suspended license?
There were two reasons that the district court came up with, Your Honor. to, I don't think this requires any inconsistency with Devin Peck. As I said, Devin Peck addressed only the fact of an arrest, the justification for the arrest.
It's the whole line of cases that began with Wren. That's the problem. And so I just, I mean, walk me through what an opinion in your client's favor would say that doesn't in any way rest on the subjective thought processes of the officer here.
So it would say that where there is a search incident to arrest and the search precedes the arrest, the government bears the burden of showing that the officer would have arrested.
There you go. That's what I'm saying.
But, Your Honor, in cases as recently as Peterson, which we cited in our Rule 28J letter, the district court heard the testimony of the officer and credited the testimony of the officer that the booking would have occurred absent the prior illegal search. And that's the kind of evidence we're looking for in this case, Your Honor, that the government absolutely did not present.
No, that was an inevitable discovery issue, and it's trying to reconstruct the world that would have followed from an objective standpoint. It had nothing to do with the officer's thought processes, because here I gather your argument would completely fall apart if the officer had testified affirmatively at the hearing, oh, no, I was going to arrest him for the marijuana offense anyway, right? Then your argument, it disappeared.
That would have been a much more difficult case, Your Honor. But this is a type of inevitable discovery that the government is relying on here, although it won't acknowledge it. Because what happened at each stage of the officer's conduct here was completely, was justified on a completely hypothetical basis by the district court. The officer said that he was searching Mr. Johnson for evidence of drugs. He said he was arresting him based on the body armor he found during the search. And he said also that he was searching the car based on an inventory search. But the district court and the government have justified that sequence of events based on things that were completely hypothetical, that would not have necessarily resulted in a custodial arrest.
Not hypothetical, that the officer had probable cause to arrest your client at the moment of the pat-down for the marijuana offense. He could have done that. And if he had just said, that's what I was intending to do, I just didn't get around to it later, your argument is completely out the window. And so it seems to me the only way we could rule in your client's favor is to say, well, the key difference here is that the officer sort of suggested that maybe he wasn't intending to arrest him at that moment. I don't see how that can be squared with any of the cases that began with Wren.
Because the court has relied on officer testimony in situations like this where there needs to be a custodial arrest. The government bears the burden. It was addressed in Macabeo by the California Supreme Court and in Reed, the New York High Court. This is the type of testimony. I agree that we would have a much more difficult case if the officer had testified that he would have arrested Mr. Johnson anyway. But that is not this case, Your Honor. The government had the officer on the stand. It bore the burden of showing what would have happened if the officer had not made an illegal arrest based on the fruits of the prior search. And the Supreme Court, neither the Supreme Court nor this court has ever held that probable cause to arrest is enough. There has to be an actual arrest, and the arrest in this case was clearly based on the fruits of the search in the officer's mind, as the officer testified, and the government bore the burden of showing that there would have been an arrest absent what the officer did had he not done that. So, and the government just has not carried its burden, Your Honor.
How do you get around Rawlins? It seems to me that Chief Justice Rehnquist has given you a hard hurdle. You'll recall the language. Let me call it to your attention so you can respond. Where the formal arrest followed quickly on the heels of the challenged search of the petitioner's person, we do not believe it particularly important that the search preceded the arrest rather than vice versa.
Yes, Your Honor. Rawlins is distinguishable because in that case, it was clear, in contrast to this case, that an arrest was going to occur. The arrest that followed...
It didn't say that. That isn't what the Chief Justice said.
It's clear, but it's clear if you read the entire order, including the facts, because he was arrested based on the drugs and his admission to the drugs that were found in the search of the purse, which he did not have standing to challenge.
You're distinguishing it on something that wasn't there. That doesn't help you too much when the overall statement itself indicts. Are you saying that we disregard the statement of the Supreme Court?
I just believe that the statement of the Supreme Court in that case, which was only a paragraph and a rather lengthy opinion, needs to be distinguished based on the facts of what happened in that case. Moreover,
pretty long paragraph. It's almost a half a page.
It is. But I think, again, if you read it in the context of what happened, the officers were executing a search warrant. The defendant in that case had been present for 45 minutes awaiting that, and he had admitted to the drugs found in the search, and that's what he was arrested based on, Your Honor.
All right, counsel, you've exceeded your time. We will give you 1 minute for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Philip Kopsinski, and I represent the United States. If I may, I'll just pick up with a couple of those points that the court just heard. First, the point about subjective versus objective intent. As the court seems to agree, the Supreme Court has been abundantly clear over decades of case law that objective intent is what controls, and there are lots of reasons why. Subjective intent is just not a good way to judge the Fourth Amendment.
What you're asking our court to do in this case, I'll just speak for myself. It makes me very uncomfortable because it confers almost unlimited discretion on officers to basically harass people that they were not otherwise going to arrest because the offense was too minor for whatever reason. Just to go on a fishing expedition to see what a search will turn up. And I guess that's the one thing that gives me the most concern about adopting your position here. So I wonder if you have any response to that concern.
Your Honor, I do. I have a couple of responses. My first is, of course, here an arrest did occur. So it's for another day, probably in a 1983 action.
It actually illustrates the very danger of the rule you're asking us to adopt, because if the officer otherwise was going to let Mr. Johnson go on his way, right, and decided, guy looks, I don't know anything about Mr. Johnson, but whatever it is that piqued this officer's interest in him, caused him to want to do a more thorough search of him to see if he could turn up some other evidence of criminality for which an arrest really would be warranted, that's exactly what happened. Because it was only because he did the pat-down search that he discovered the body armor.
Body armor and then the drugs and gun and so
right.
forth.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. To me, that's exactly the kind of abuse that your rule is going to create, right?
Your Honor, respectfully, we just don't see it that way. And as I say, here the arrest did occur, so we think we're well-rooted in the case law. In the situation where... as Your Honor is supposing, a sort of speculative arrest. There is PC for some basis for arrest, but it's otherwise not going to happen.
So the person who gets pulled over in the nice Mercedes and is wearing a business suit, right? That person, the officer sees the exact same thing and says, I'm not going to waste my time trying to do it. I could do a search here, but let this person go on. But someone like Mr. Johnson, he looks suspicious to me. I want to dig a little further. And lo and behold, evidence of further criminality turns. That's what I'm saying. I just don't think that's the kind of discretion we should be conferring on officers. And that seems to me that what your rule will create here.
Well, I don't think so. And a couple of points. So first of all, I want to be clear about Mr. Johnson. So when this officer, before conducting any search, here's what he knows about Mr. Johnson. Johnson's riding a vehicle that's not his own. There's no proof of insurance or registration in the vehicle. The odor of both burnt and fresh marijuana is emanating from the car. Plastic bags and pill bottles are in the glove box. Mr. Johnson sort of fakes as if he's looking for the registration, but just kind of pats the items in the glove box.
Anyone's disputing that the officer had probable cause to arrest Mr. Johnson for a marijuana offense if he wanted to. But I gather that he didn't quite get around to saying that he was going to arrest him for that anyway, right?
There's no indication one way or the other what his intentions were at those early moments. I would note the list goes on. Johnson's a felon. He's a suspect in an officer homicide. His license is suspended. My point is that there are a lot of bad facts here for Mr. Johnson. This is not a case.
I'm not writing an opinion, assuming we were to publish, that's just going to apply to your to this particular individual. Do you understand, I guess, the concern that I'm expressing?
Absolutely.
So you started to say that you had some responses, and I guess what you pivoted to, it seemed to me, was here are all the bad facts for Mr. Johnson. So what's the more general concern response to that concern?
Of course, and if I may, the point is that the court, on these specific facts, respectfully, I don't think is condoning arbitrary searches or discriminatory searches. I think there was good reason.
But the question was, setting aside these particular facts,
yes,
on the general principle,
right,
how do we narrow?
More broadly.
Did I finish my question?
Yes, and more broadly.
I finished my question.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear you. Yes.
How could we write a holding that more narrowly confines the officer to cabining his search with the arrest? How would we do that? Or is it your view that we don't have to do that?
Well, my view is you do not, but if you wanted to, Your Honor, I believe it's United States versus Smith, essentially, combined with some of the principles the Second Circuit recognized in Diaz, the D.C. Court of Appeals in Lewis, but it's already essentially this court's opinion in Smith. It's very close to those facts. Smith picked up on Rollins and the point that simply arrest and search don't have to go in that order if they're substantially contemporaneous. That's the language this court and the Supreme Court have used. And, Your Honor, if I could, I do want to speak to that broader concern about the potential. We don't think it's present here, but the potential that this truly could be discriminatory. Pull someone over just for speeding, for example, no other facts, yet that is technically an arrestable offense, so you do this sort of search. Our main response is that the Supreme Court already thought about that problem in Wren and Atwater, and it answered it. Atwater, of course, was a contentious 5-4 decision, but the court did provide an answer. And the answer is that an arrest is lawful if there is probable cause for any offense. In Atwater, it's not buckling your seatbelt. And the court in that case, the Supreme Court very openly acknowledged that the petitioner in that case was humiliated, subjected to unfair, humiliating, invasive treatment by the police. But the court said as a Fourth Amendment matter, it was okay.
Right. No, that whole line of cases, beginning with Wren, has led us to where we are. And I think that's what caused Justice Ginsburg to say last term, maybe we need to rethink this because we have seen the kinds of abuses it leads to. And I guess I'm still waiting for, maybe there is no assurance you provide. You just say, hey, that's the law. Sorry. You have to apply what the Supreme Court told you. And that's fine if that's the response. But do you have something else to respond to Judge Rawlinson's question?
Sure. In terms of limiting principles, one very obvious principle we see looking between Davenport and Knowles is that so long as an encounter with an individual is ongoing, there is not yet a citation, also not yet an arrest, then the sort of search we see here is proper. If, however, the person is released, or let alone if they're cited, like in Knowles, then plainly no search is no longer proper. So we think while that encounter is ongoing, that is the moment in time or the window of time that an officer can proceed as here, search, then arrest. But as I say, if the person's released, it's not like you could then, on second thought, come back, search later. That would be improper in our view.
Is there any outer limit in your mind in terms of time constraints? If the officer was still searching 2 hours later, would that be within the confines of the Fourth Amendment?
I think that would start to present a real problem. And there are a number of ways to think about that. One in the car stop contest is Rodriguez, the Supreme Court's decision of a couple years ago, which talks about the reasonable duration of a car stop. So, again, if we were talking purely about a traffic offense, seat belts like in Atwater.
But we're not talking about a traffic offense. That's why I asked you that question. Because you were relying on the fact that there were a lot of problems that could cause the officer to have a reasonable suspicion of this particular detainee. So that's why I ask you in that context, how long can the suspicion linger? How long can a search go in those circumstances?
Your Honor, I think in that case there would be other cases that would be relevant, just depending on how the search proceeded. Of course, overly invasive searches like strip searches, a blood draw, that's all off limits under well-established Supreme Court law. Of course, you couldn't search the cell phone or luggage that the person is holding. That's other Supreme Court cases. So I think there are plenty of cases that say the search would simply be of the person and not things like cell phones in pockets, not overly invasive like body cavity. It would necessarily have to be a pretty quick process, as long as it takes to search someone's person within those limitations. And if I may, the defense has repeatedly mentioned the couple of state Supreme Court cases that have gone the other way on this issue. Our view is those are against the overwhelming authority, including all of the federal authority, except possibly the Seventh Circuit in a sort of confusing decision from many years ago. But those are Macabo and Reed. And we think the fundamental flaw with those cases is that they get at what the court recognized a moment ago, which is that they are relying on officers' subjective thought process. And the Supreme Court has said again and again that, that's not the way to think about the Fourth Amendment.
All right. Thank you, counsel. You've exceeded your time. Thank you for your argument. Rebuttal, 1 minute.
Your Honor, we're not asking the court to rely on the officer's subjective thought processes. We are asking the court to rely on some evidence, objective testimony from the officer, whatever it is, that there would have been an arrest absent the search in this case. And again, the government has not produced that. Your Honor is correct that this was a very intrusive search. The officer put his hands on Mr. Johnson's body and went into his pockets. Any concerns the officer had could have been addressed in a much less intrusive way. Finally, what the government is asking this court to create is a search incident to probable cause exception, that it would apply when a situation is ongoing. But that runs counter to the Supreme Court's repeated reliance on the rationales for a search incident to arrest exception. Those are during the process when the officer is actually taking the person into custody and evidence that may be needed for trial. Also, and not to be diminished, an arrestee's reduced expectations of privacy. And Your Honor, when an officer just has probable cause and the situation is ongoing, as the government says, none of those come into play. Therefore, this court should decline to extend the search incident to arrest exception.
All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you to both counsel for your helpful arguments. The case just argued is submitted for a decision by the court. The next case on calendar, Mutee versus United States, has been deferred. The next case on calendar for argument is Sandoval versus County of Sonoma.